In their book, Saving Paradise, Rita Nakashami Brock and Rebecca Parker tell of their exploration of early Christianity and how they discovered Jesus' saving message was for his followers to be creators of paradise in their lives and in the world around them. They found this message over and over in the iconic work art of early Christianity, in the ancient writings, and in the sacred spaces once occupied. Paradise was written about extensively as a means to live joyfully, to enact justice and nonviolence, and to know love. In early Christianity, beauty was an ethical and aesthetical orientation. Brock and Parker state, beauty integrated goodness with glory, ethics with grace, and spirit with flesh. All were essential to fully realize humanity. Beauty made ethics possible by evoking the deep yearnings for justice, healing, and peace. The ethics of beauty were grounded not in a mental list of rules to be obeyed, but in a loving orientation toward the world. Beauty called humanity out into life and invited acute observation and attunement to the here and now. Can you imagine what our world would be like today if that was the saving message that permeated our world? That we were supposed to love each other and love the world and lift up beauty. Can you imagine? How would our world be differently? Can you even picture it? We would not have seen the oppression of women and people of color because all people were loved by Jesus. We would have not seen the destruction of our natural resources because Jesus encouraged us to walk gently on this earth and praise the beauty around us. We would not have colonization and manifest destiny because Jesus reminded us that earth was actually a gift for us to cherish and not ours to own. Our world would be so different than it is today. And many have taken the stance humanity is beyond saving at this point. We have pushed the earth to its extremes. We've not cherished the gift we've been given. We've oppressed people for too long. Some feel we need to just prepare for the end of times. It's just too hard to imagine fixing what has gone wrong at this point. In her essay, What Can We Hope For?, Sandra Lubarsky tells us, save your despair for when you really need it. She continues, the immediate situation is bad, even terrible, but the world might yet be different. To despair too soon is counterproductive. Instead, she suggests we need to live according to literary critic Raymond Williams, and that is to be truly radical, to make hope possible rather than despair convincing. Or we need the kind of hope environmentalist David Orr suggests, the kind of hope that steps back, rolls up its sleeves, and gets ready for work. Can you imagine that kind of hope? The kind of hope that we need to have an active part in playing, an active part in playing to save the world. And we can do this by celebrating and cultivating beauty in our world, which, by the way, again, just a reminder, was Jesus's saving message. I have talked before about how we're co-creators in this world of ours, that we are lured or persuaded by divinity, beauty, love, to make choices which create the world we want to live in. Our reading, How Jesus Plays Jazz, which is a wonderful essay, if you ever want to read it, I can get it to you. It's just so much fun. Suggests we are all part of a larger picture of creation by being invited by Jesus to each share our songs. That no matter what tune we played or sang, we were welcomed and encouraged to be part of that larger symphony, that larger world that we belong to. So I've been having fun with this concept over the past few days, and one of the resources I came across suggested this was exemplified in a certain piece of music by Mozart. How many of you are familiar with Mozart's Jupiter? A few, especially the finale. So what is important about this piece is Mozart accomplished something that was truly an act of beauty. And I'm not much of a classical music fan, but I listened to this so much and it just stuck in my head and it made me a happy person, so. He composed a piece that had five different melodies. And at the end, they all play at once. Five melodies all at once. And I've got a short piece for you to listen to. I can't just talk about it, you gotta hear it. That wouldn't be fair. Did you get all five?
Yes.
Yeah? So just a note, if you want to go listen to this yourself, I listened to it in piano and then as a whole symphony. Listen to it as a whole symphony. The intricacies of it are amazing with a symphony because of the different instruments and stuff. So just a recommendation. So this could be all chaotic, right? This beautiful piece could be all chaotic, but there's an important part of it. Important part of it. And it's a small four-note motif that holds it all together, and I want to play it for you. It's actually short, so it's only four notes. Well, maybe a little longer because I didn't cut it properly. So those four notes, did you remember hearing those in the larger symphony? Those are the things that held it together. Patricia Adams Farmer, in her essay, Beauty Can Save Us, suggests this. We could say, in this final fugue, the four-note motif acts as the presence of God, holding the contrasting elements together and inviting each particular melody to be in itself in relation. God is present in the moment, not outside looking in, not apathetic and remote. God unfolds with the music, luring all the other contrasting elements toward a rich harmony. The lure of God, that little motif, is there always elegant and whole, and it loves many melodies. So not only can we find this lure in music, but we can find it in our natural world. How many of you have noticed the rich, diverse color and species of pictures that have been up here this morning? Right? Even in the picture that's up there, can you imagine all that had to go into the critters, the bugs, the insects, the plants, all of it that had to create that beautiful picture? Can you imagine? And we can see it. I asked how many of you saw spring springing up all over the place? It's everywhere. You'd have to close your eyes and walk around blindly not to see it right now. We can find this in the living forms, whether it be birds chirping. The birds outside our windows at our house right now are so loud. The cat snuggling or the deer crossing in front of our path. Beauty is a constant lure everywhere we look. And Farmer suggests we can see this lure in the melodies of the earth, of humanity, the cosmos. Some melodies are quiet introverts, others are jovial extroverts. Some are snowy egrets, others are bees. There are melodies for the deeply religious and the skeptical, the athletic and the disabled, gay, straight, east, west, the planets and galaxies themselves. God lures them all toward the highest beauty, not only for their particular melodies, but for the whole symphony. And this specific lure that we're talking about of beauty calls us into a new way of being in relationship with the world and encourages us to each play a part. We honestly need to recognize and fully embrace our seventh principle for this to happen. And for those of you that don't know our seventh principle, it's the respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. This means we need to take a hard look at our lifestyles. Do we actually live within the limits of the earth? Do we respect the other life forms we coexist with? What systems have we created which allow us to work with each other to share resources? So let's play with a concept. How many of you know about our neighborhood groups? Okay, so our neighborhood groups are groups that are put together according to geographic area in our community, in our larger valley, and each of them are interconnected, and some go and do social things together, some do specific tasks for each other, like get the mail if you're out of town, or offer rides, or all of these different things. So what would it look like if our neighborhood groups became sustainable communities? What would it look like? What would that look like? What if we each planted a garden in our neighborhoods that were different resources, had different things, and we shared them with each other? Because you know, when you plant one tomato plant, you have way more tomatoes than what you could possibly eat, right? And how many of you have actually natural, or not natural, somebody planted them, but have trees and stuff that just carry fruit, and you have so much fruit that it drops on the ground, right? What if we shared those? What if we carpooled together? What if our neighborhood groups became carpool? What if, say, I don't know, I had a blender that I no longer needed because I got it I got another gift. What if somebody else needed that blender? What if we had these items that we no longer needed or used, but somebody in our neighborhood group might? What would that look like? Let's push it a little bit further. What if those neighborhood groups weren't just made up of those people who lived in the church? What if we actually included, I don't know, some of our neighbors, the people we live around? What would that look like? What kind of community could we transform this valley to be by creating all these micro-sustainable communities around us? And what kind of education could we do? I know I don't know how to compost, but I know somebody out here does. And I know we have a beekeeper that could teach us all how to beekeep. Is that a word? But can you imagine beekeep? Beekeeping? Oh, keep bees? Oh, just turn it around? Got it. Took me a moment. So the idea of this lure of beauty, this idea of thinking about different possibilities, is once you think of one possibility, what happens? It grows, right? Because that possibility turns into another possibility, which turns into 20 more possibilities, right? And that's the whole idea of being co-creators and being lured by this beauty, by being in this symphony that Jesus has invited us to be part of. So take a moment and think about what it is your special melody. What's your song? Do you have a lure or a call to action, a call to do something this morning, and what would it be? Hold it. Let it sink down into your heart. Let it take root. The lure of beauty reminds us we each have a part in co-creation, and our part is one of many in a larger symphony. We need to be radical in our hope. We need to roll up our sleeves and not be immobilized by despair. Jesus called us to be co-creators of beauty, to create paradise here and now. We have an obligation as living beings that are part of an interconnected web to play our part, to find our melody. So take that, which took root, and go do something with it. Okay? Because I don't know about you, but I want to see the beauty continue. I want to see the beauty for my children, for whatever grandchildren come, for whatever generations come. It doesn't even have to be mine, whatever generations, because we are part of a world community. And it's not just about our Wenatchee Valley, it's about our world, right? And it's about respecting all living beings, whether they are on two legs, four legs, winged, fish, whatever living beings, the little organisms that make life possible. Find your place, find your melody, and continue to hear that lure towards more sustainable and beautiful world. And let's all contribute and play our part. May it be so.